Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. You all know me by now. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and you should also be equally as acquainted with my two co-hosts. We have Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage.
Yep.
We also have Danny King, a writer for the Film Stage.
Yep.
Did I miss a memo of some kind?
No.
All right. Just a yuppie day. So anyone just joining us for the first time, the Film Stage Show, we like to talk about movies, obviously, and we will begin by getting into a movie discussion topic, which will then be followed by our feature review, which today will be Sleepwalk With Me, directed by Mike Birbiglia and Seth Barish, written by Mike Birbiglia, as well as a few others, co-starring Mike Birbiglia, Lauren Ambrose, and James Rebhorn. Before we get into that, though, like I said, we give a movie discussion topic. But before we even do that, little bit of housekeeping. I'd like to remind you all once again to subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, comment on iTunes. We love getting feedback, and we really like to hear from you people. You can also email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com with any questions or comments, both positive and negative. If you have something mean to say, don't feel like that has to hold you back. Obviously, we'd prefer to hear good things, but hey, we can't be picky. We're people who thrive off of the adulation and jeering of our audience. Today we want to talk about the Toronto International Film Festival, which is going on right now. You may have seen people tweeting about it. You may have seen reviews pouring in about movies there. I personally don't read any because I don't like to read a review before I've seen a movie. But we wanted to give you just our opinions on what we think are the top three films to look out for at this festival. We did the same thing with Cannes. We did the same thing with what was coming out this summer. And we figured we'd keep up the trend. So let's go through. We'll go one at a time. We'll give our top three, one movie at a time, obviously. So let's begin with our third most anticipated film coming out of TIFF. And why don't we start off with Nick?
Brian De Palma's Passion is my number three. This would have been higher if it was not for the reviews that came out of Venice recently, which have not been kind. People are not liking this movie, I'm sorry to read, but De Palma is great, and I've liked every movie that he's made post-Snake Eyes. That includes Mission to Mars and The Black Dahlia, by the way.
Well, that puts you in quite a minority right there.
Yeah. Yeah, what can I say? I like his style, and I like what he does. And I think Passion is going to be more of the same, which is what a lot of people say in a negative sense, but to me that's good. I think it looks fun, and it's great to have him back. Even if it's bad, at least he'll be back to making movies.
I guess. I mean, it's funny, because you said you were excited about it, and it would have been higher, except for the reviews coming out of Venice. I feel like you should have just known that was going to happen. And that it wouldn't have affected your anticipation.
But it's also from like De Palma fans who say it's a trifle.
So this is like a targeted demographic.
Yeah, it's like blanket hatred.
That's no good. All right, well, that's sad to hear, but I'm glad that your enthusiasm is only slightly flagged. Danny, why don't you give us what your what your number three is?
Well, just to avoid hate mail of any kind, I am not going to have The Master in there because I've seen it. Though it would probably be in there. It would definitely be in there. But for my number three, I'm going to go with Cloud Atlas, which is the collaboration between Tom Tykwer and the Wachowskis. I have read the book, and I really liked it. But one of the reasons I'm looking forward to the movie is because even though I like the book, I could still see the movie just turning out to be a total disaster. But on the other hand, it could also be really, really cool. And when I kind of think about movies that I'm anticipating really heavily, it usually has something to do with the fact that, like, I don't quite know how I'm going to feel about it. And that's definitely how I feel with Cloud Atlas. Like, it could go either way, and really want to see it.
Yeah, I have not been
intrigued. I remember that you were not into that one from the trailer.
I even read the...
I'm a little mixed as well.
You're unimpressed?
I don't want to say I'm impressed because that feels sort of callous, but well, not callous. It feels a little unfair because they're shooting for the stars, but
yeah, no. I mean, it's ambitious, and that should be lauded.
I feel like that's the equivalent of when you say if an actor gives a bad performance, you say, "Well, they just didn't have anything to do."
Yeah.
No, not to interrupt too much, but okay. I mean, the movie is screening right now.
As we're recording.
So when this episode is released, we'll have impressions from people to trust.
I don't know. I even read the New Yorker piece that was done on it.
Yeah,
And I don't know. It's the trailer didn't do much for me. The New Yorker piece was interesting, and it's good to see people shooting for the stars, as Nick said. But I don't know. There's something about it. I'm also kind of creeped out that they're, like, digitally altering people to look Asian. That just seems like a dangerous precedent. But,
kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
Those are the only movies I like, so...
You only like movies where people are, like, in some sort of ethnic garb.
Yeah, so that kind of boiled down this exercise for me.
I was about to say your top three of all time are Touch of Evil, Breakfast at Tiffany's...
Oh, boy.
And Amos and Andy.
You got me all figured out.
I thought I might. But I guess it's time for my number three. There's a lot of films that are happening that I'm interested in seeing. So I had to choose three that I wanted to see just how they delivered on a promise, on like an interesting premise, not only from like a narrative standpoint, but just kind of, I don't know, these are movies that to me seem interesting just in the creation as well as just being by interesting filmmakers. So my number three, with that caveat, is Looper by Rian Johnson. I loved Brick, and that was a cool little genre exercise. And I'm one of the few people who's just emphatically in love with the Brothers Bloom. And the idea of him going back with the Brick star, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and, you know, revisiting the well of kind of a noirish seeming and then putting the sci-fi in there. I don't know. It seems like it could be interesting. It also seems like it could be a mess. But from what I've seen thus far of the tweets that I haven't been able to scroll past before I read them, because, again, I'm trying to keep myself as virgin for all these films as possible, it's apparently pretty good.
Yeah, that got great reviews.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
I feel like every choice is going to have one of us going, I don't know if I want to see that much.
Is that you?
Yeah, well, I want to see it because, you know, people say it's good and the idea is interesting and the trailer's kind of fun. But I don't know. I thought Rian Johnson's first two movies were okay. Brick is fun, but I kind of shrugged it off. And Brothers Bloom is fun, but I kind of shrugged it off. I don't know. I find his movies to be a little middle brow. And Looper, I feel like when you're doing that, you have to really bring it. And I'm not saying he won't. I hope he does. But
right. But there's enough doubt that's keeping you from committing to it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I mean, I'll wait.
Yeah.
I'll wait.
Well, that's the thing.
Reviews are good, but...
We haven't seen any of these films, and God only knows. I haven't looked at any of the reviews. I don't know about the rest of you. But, you know, it's all anticipation.
Well, reviews are good. Spoiler.
All the reviews are good. I actually did, unfortunately, read a review. I broke my promise to myself, and it may have given away a plot point that I would have preferred to have stayed ignorant of. But I don't know. Unimportant. Let's go to the number two pick.
Yes. So I should have said this before with my picks, but Danny also kind of said it. I'm not going to include any movies that have release dates, because The Master I'm going to see in 6 days and Cloud Atlas I'll be seeing in like a month and a half. So what's the point? Because the way I see it, yeah, I know when they're coming out. So with the second choice, perhaps I'm cheating a bit, but because I know it has a distributor and it'll probably come out at the end of this year. But that is Something in the Air by Olivier Assayas, who last made Carlos, which was one of the best movies of 2010. And before that, he made Summer Hours, which was one of the best movies of 2008. He's made several very good films. He's a very, very good filmmaker. I've seen most of his movies, and I really like him. And this looks sort of like a blending of Carlos and... I don't know, maybe some earlier works. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to get too specific, but yeah, I'm really liking what we're seeing so far. There was a first clip that was really kinetic and energetic and exciting, and the word so far has been pretty good. And I think that he's just one of the more interesting filmmakers working in the world today. And a new film from him is something to pay rapt attention to.
Yeah. I think that won Best Screenplay at Venice today.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that, but there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been up on any awards coming out of Venice.
Yeah, they just announced them a couple hours ago. It was a mess.
This happened the last time when we were talking about Cannes, too. Like, the awards were coming out as we were podcasting. We're on the cutting edge, man. If I could learn to edit faster. But yeah, Danny, what about you? Number two.
Number two, I'm going to go with To the Wonder, which is Terrence Malick's follow-up to The Tree of Life, which was my favorite movie of last year. One of my favorite movies in a long, long time. And the early word on To the Wonder, which is kind of interesting, is that if you love Tree of Life, you might not love this one. But if you thought Tree of Life was kind of too out there, or however you want to phrase it, then you'll really go for To the Wonder. Anticipation of the movie is less about kind of what I've heard of it and more about just the fact that Terrence Malick is like making two movies in 2 years and that we can see two new movies of his within that period of time. And that also makes me kind of skeptical, but I'm really eager to get a look at it.
That's interesting. I haven't heard anything, literally anything, except for Nick's article that we talked about. I think it was last week or the week before.
Yeah, I saw some tweets and like that seemed to be the consensus, but you know, I didn't read into it a ton.
Well, I loved Tree of Life. That was my favorite of last year too, but I have also liked everything else he's made, which were, you know, smaller scale. So I'd be interested to see where people fit it in his canon as a whole.
Yeah.
But I won't talk too much about that. Spoiler alert for my list. my number two pick is Anna Karenina, actually, because this should probably surprise no one. I read that book when I was like in high school, and I've read it once subsequent beyond that. It's one of the books that like emotionally has affected me the most. I would say it's probably my favorite novel, just in like the sheer anger and frustration it caused in me. Like, Tolstoy has a really good way of making people real to you, and just as much as you get pissed off at a friend for making a terrible decision, that's how pissed off I got at everyone in that book. On top of that, I really enjoy Joe Wright. He's been a little hit and miss, but he's...
That's gone. One way of putting it.
Okay. Nick obviously has some feelings about this. I really, really enjoyed Atonement. I really enjoyed Hannah. Pride and Prejudice was good, but kind of, I don't know, basic. And The Soloist, I don't have to talk about. I think that what he's doing with this film and the way that he's putting the story across as being on a stage is interesting, both thematically and just from a how the hell are they going to pull that off. Tom Stoppard, who wrote the screenplay, is a playwright that I really like. So a lot of different things lining up in the favor of this movie for me. And like I said, with my list, I'm just kind of interested to see how people pull off these things. So I'm gonna say that I'm interested to see how this one goes. And I've seen a few tweets, and they seem to be falling in the favorable direction.
Jeff Wells went nuts over that movie.
Yeah, but like Jeff Wells is a piece of shit. So
in a good way, though.
I was about to say, is that supposed to make me less enthusiastic?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But it does seem like a very aggressive adaptation. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's just interesting that you love the book so much. So, and it might, you know, have kind of a unique treatment of it. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had a spotty record with reading books that got turned into movies this year, and I'm hoping that by them doing this and infusing it with a little more style, if that's even the correct word to use, and I don't think it is, I think I might get a little more out of it, even though I've read it twice and probably know everything they're going to do. Also, it's just a huge book, so I'm interested to see what they excise. I'm wondering if like the numerous chapters devoted to peasant labor are still going to be in there.
Probably like Satan not. Tango.
But yeah, that'll bring us to our number one picks. And Nick, we can start off with you.
To the Wonder!
Wonder!
All right, I'm just going to fold mine into yours too, because mine is also all to right. The Wonder.
You want to just discuss this in tandem?
Yeah, let's just talk about how freaking awesome Terrence Malick is.
Yes, reaction to the Wonder has been divided, but I don't give a shit, because... you know, people had a mixed reaction to Tree of Life, and that ended up being my favorite movie of last year. Maybe one of my favorite movies of all time.
When aren't people divided on Terrence Malick?
Yeah, but this was like, people were going, that's all right. And then it was more than all right. You know, Yeah, To the Wonder. I am so curious. I skimmed through a couple of reviews. I read some tweets, but I still, the great thing is that I really don't know what to expect. The reaction could be masterpiece. The reaction could be, you know, garbage. I wouldn't be phased, by the way. Could you be phased if they say it's a masterpiece? No.
It's like, oh man, I was really hoping for like a minor achievement. The fact that it's a masterpiece is kind of bumming me out.
Exactly. Uncontested number one.
Yeah, definitely for me too. I mean, it's Terrence fucking Malick, man. I mean, you don't have to say much beyond that. And as Danny said when he brought this up as his number two, which is blasphemous in my opinion, but I won't get into that.
Even worse when you hear my number one.
All right. I can't wait to hear that.
Someone can't wait. I couldn't think of a bad TIFF title on time. Number one.
I don't know. It's Terrence Malick. The fact that I don't have to spend 7 years waiting for his new film is reason enough for me to really look forward to this. But also, I'm wondering, because he was able to complete it so rapidly, I mean, like, that's just weird to me. So I'm interested to see, like, if you take his time frame and cut it down by like a seventh, or cut it down to a seventh, I should say, you know, how does that affect it? How does that change it? But I don't know. Apparently the man is on a creative streak. Maybe he finally got Tree of Life out and that freed him up for all this other stuff he's doing.
Yeah, Jack Fisk, his production designer, if you've seen his movies, you'll surely recognize the name, said that kind of, you know, off the record, said that Tree of Life was his white whale. And now that it's done, it's sort of like the floodgates have been opened.
Yeah, I read that or saw that in a tweet somewhere. And I was excited about that because he's not only got To the Wonder, he's got two other films that he's working on. He's got, Knight of Cups.
And What Was Once Known as Lawless.
What Was Once Known as Lawless, which is apparently about movie studios and not the music scene.
Yeah, I don't know.
Time will tell. We'll
find out in 2017.
But let's move on to Danny's final pick, which we apparently may not like.
Yeah, the number one here is The Place Beyond the Pines, which reunites Ryan Gosling with his Blue Valentine director. And this movie debuted today or maybe yesterday, like a really mixed response. Some people loved it and thought it was like instantly one of their favorite movies of the year. Other people kind of thought it was just too jam-packed with activity. But I'm very intrigued. One of the things I liked about the reaction is that people say Dane DeHaan gives a really standout supporting performance, and he played Cricket in Lawless, but more prominently he was really good in Chronicle earlier in this year. That movie is like only okay, but he's really good in it. And
yeah, he's a fantastic actor just from those two films. I mean, I think I brought that up in the Lawless review, that I was glad that he wasn't going to get pigeonholed as the creepy male version of Carrie.
Right, yeah, because he's really creepy in Chronicle. But yeah, so I'm really intrigued to see Place Beyond the Pines, you know.
I can get behind that. I'm not pissed. But and I too am looking forward to it. But like I said, I'm just a little more eager to see these films, just because I think they strive for something a little more.
Yeah, I think you might have missed like Ryan Gosling's blonde hair in the.
Oh yeah, some of that's a risky choice. You know.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from that.
It looks a little dopey. I always think Ryan Gosling looks a little dopey, but in particular with his blonde hair.
He seems, like, confused. Like, every movie he's in... And I love Ryan Gosling. I should say this. I love him. He's a great actor.
No, I like him, too.
Yeah.
But he
always just seems, like, a little confused. Like, oh, shit, there's a camera there.
Yeah.
I did, however, not like Ides of March.
Oh, that was a really good movie.
Wait, what about... You said it was a good movie?
Well, yeah, I was a very big fan, but that...
Solid movie.
Came out 11 months ago, so let's move on.
It did. Speaking of moving on, that's all that we have to say about that. We look forward to the stuff coming out from TIFF, tweets, reviews, things like that. Definitely check out the film stage, because I know we'll have some stuff coming out about it. And I don't want to make promises that I can't keep, but we may be having a special episode of the podcast to run down with some of the people who were there just like we had coming out of Cannes, the special discussion topics beforehand.
This is literally the first I've heard of it.
Right? Yeah, same.
Yeah, wow. I even was able to surprise my co-hosts. So we'll see about that. But if not, you know you can still go to the film stage for even more information. So let's move on into our feature review of Sleepwalk With Me, directed, starring, and written by Mike Birbiglia, co-starring Laura Ambrose, James Reborn, and just a bunch of other people. Ira Glass has a cameo. But yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to tell you a story, and it's true. I always have to tell people that because inevitably someone will come up to me and they'll be like, is that true? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, was it? I don't know how to respond to that. Like, I guess I could say it louder, you know, like, yeah. And they'd be like, it's probably true. Say it louder.
And now the big comedian, Matt Pandapiglio.
Hey, y'all ready to lip sync? I can't hear you. My lip sync joke. So here's what happened. My girlfriend Abby and I moved in together. She's great. And my sister Janet got engaged.
You're next.
Coming your way, baby. Batter up.
And everyone started talking about marriage.
How long have you and Abby been together?
8 years.
I don't remember being so long. That's ridiculous.
And that night,
Abby!
I started walking in my sleep.
There's a jackal in the room.
So that was from the trailer for Sleepwalk With Me, which is an independent film, a little tiny release we wanted to get into, because honestly, everything else coming out this weekend kind of looked like, what's a scholarly
garbage
word for shit or garbage? Detritus? Detritus? I don't know how to pronounce that word. Nothing looked
Renaissance.
Good. Renaissance.
It's, this, you can just cut this out, but I, in a reading assignment I had for school, the word Renaissance came up, and in my head I read it as Renaissance.
I'm glad so, that I'm glad that I could affect you that way.
Yeah.
I'm in your head, man. But yeah, Sleepwalk With Me. Out in theaters now. You should well, I guess this is giving away my thoughts on the film. You should definitely check it out if you have a chance to. I'm gonna leave it at that for now though. Danny, why don't you start us off? Why don't you tell us what you thought of Sleepwalk With Me?
Big fan. Big fan. I think that the kind of achievement of the movie is that it covers a lot of familiar ground narratively in terms of, like, you have this guy who has, you know, kind of this over-aggressive dad. He's got this ditzy mom. He's having trouble with his girlfriend. But the insights of the movie manage to be so fresh and poignant that the effect of the movie is really kind of surprising once it gets to the end. And I think where the movie kind of turns for me is when Birbiglia's character starts going on the road, and he really enjoys himself. And to me, that starts to say something really powerful about the difficulties of balancing, like, personal and professional interests. Because you mentioned Lauren Ambrose's name. She plays his girlfriend, and she's like a perfect girlfriend. There's really nothing wrong in the relationship, except that it's kind of gone stale. And when he's in these motel rooms, like, eating pizza by himself, he's, like, really happy. And I think that's kind of a deceptively really poignant thing for a movie to say. And once that kind of happened, I was, like, in this movie's lap, and I really loved it.
Yeah, I guess I neglected to say that this movie is about a struggling stand-up comic who's struggling not only his professional but his personal life with his girlfriend of 8 years. Just thought I should throw that in there so we have some context. Yeah, no, I agree with you that the movie definitely comes alive when that stuff is brought up and you begin to see the difference between him in this life that he had and then in this life that he's starting to make for himself. Yeah, it's funny how you say what the movie's about and you kind of get this idea of where it's going to go. And yet, like you said, you know, the insights are fresh and new and interesting and given forward in a way that's really quite spectacular. Nick, what did you think of Sleepwalk With Me?
You know, this is the third street film we reviewed that I loved, if you can believe it.
I can't believe it.
Score.
You're supposed to be our counterweight, man.
Yeah. No, I went into this movie not really knowing anything and not like I was trying to go in fresh. To be honest, I kind of didn't care. And I just sort of, I don't know. I went in thinking it was just going to be kind of whatever, minor work that was going to, I would just feel like I kind of spent 90 minutes in a decent manner, but whatever. And then right from the start, I think it was right when he's telling his little anecdote, talking to the camera, I was in. And from that point forward, I don't know. There was something about the element of surprise, I think, when I didn't know anything, because part of me thought this was going to be one like a mockumentary about a comedian, and then it turns out it's a real movie, which was a surprise. Can you just imagine me sitting there? Wait, this has characters. Is this actually directed? Interesting. And no, it's very. I mean, first of all, it's funny, which is practically enough to begin with, but then it's also very sweet. There's a great humanism to the movie, which I wasn't necessarily expecting, and it's also surprisingly well made. I wasn't expecting it to, again, feel like a real movie, but also have genuine moments of inspiration. And Mike Birbiglia, I don't really know. I think I had heard of him and maybe seen 5 minutes of his stand-up, but going into this, I just kind of knew he was a comedian who people liked. And then it turns out he's a really likable, entertaining, interesting guy. And I think this movie does a beautiful job of conveying that. Even if at times he's kind of a dope, kind of inconsiderate at moments, you just sort of love him because he doesn't really intend to hurt anybody, or he never means any wrong, which I think makes him a great comedic figure. So I there's more to say, of course, but yeah, I'm quite taken with it.
Yeah, it's good that you bring that up, because I mean, he does make mistakes and stuff, but he's completely lacking in malice, which is refreshing.
Right, he's very amiable.
Right, and I mean, that works in his stand-up. I mean, I've listened to and watched his stand-up. If anyone's familiar with the public radio show This American Life, he's on a couple of them. He's everywhere in that show. And this was actually produced by and made possible because of Ira Glass, who's from that show, who's been in a lot of the interviews and stuff, and even cameos in the movie as a wedding photographer. And yeah, I mean, I was surprised because, again, I kind of thought this was going to be like a Cosmopolis or Lawless situation where I know too much going in, and so I'm going to lose all of the surprise that I should have had. But it wasn't. It wasn't like that at all. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the candid kind of confessional nature of the framing device of him, you know, in a car, just kind of talking to you, which in a lot of movies would probably not work for me. But because of him and just the way that he talks and the way that he's, I don't want to say talks, like just his voice, like his word choice and his delivery is so precisely designed to put you on his side and make you understand him that, I was able to get into it, and the actors involved, you know, even if they're playing kind of these archetypal characters, were able to imbue them with enough humanity for me to really get into it. And so instead of just being a dramatization of his stand-up, which I've seen a lot of, it became a real story and a real movie for me. I was a little thrown off at first because he did change his name in the film. So it was weird because I know this is autobiographical, but his name is like Matt Pandapiglia.
Yeah, like it's like phonetically, it's very similar.
Yeah. So it's even more weird because when I first saw the trailer, I thought that one of the jokes was that like everyone was mispronouncing his name. But not the case. It's actually his name in this film.
It gave me a little chuckle because there's a scene where Adam Warna somethingski from I don't remember his name, from Girls and Tiny Furniture, who's playing the exact same person here. I imagine he's a really callous asshole in real life because that's how he is in everything.
Yeah, he's never been like a nice, amiable guy.
No, he's the same. And I guess he was in this little movie called Supporting Characters that played with Rebecca. Good film. He's not insufferable there. But there's a scene where he gets his name mistaken for Nick, and my brother's name is Matt. So that was kind of the odds of that are very slim. So that was funny.
I'm sure we could try to calculate them, but we won't because we're too busy talking about this film, you know. And I think one of the other things I liked about it is that it's not a movie that's afraid to pull its punches in terms of the realizations that certain people come to. That'll be a more spoilery discussion. There's just an honesty to it and to everything that happens in it. And I think I'm like you, Nick. I walked in and I was like, I'm probably going to enjoy this. And I didn't think that I was going to hate it, obviously, but I didn't think that I'd like it as much as I did.
I actually walked in thinking I wasn't going to like it that much, to be honest.
Wow.
Again, it's not... I've never seen Mike Birbiglia, so it's not like I have a bias against him. I just heard about it, and it sounded a little... I don't know. Something about what I had heard rubbed me the wrong way. But
I can see that.
I feel like it's not a complicated film, but it's not something you could easily summarize in a quick synopsis either.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And
or at least it can capture what makes it so good.
And it's not complicated, which is interesting because the depth that it goes to emotionally and with its characters, I don't know, it's like simple but refreshing. It's like a really good pasta sauce. I made pasta today, so I might be stuck on this analogy for a while.
And there is marinara sauce or tomato sauce factors into one of this movie.
Yeah. That's another thing. I mean, he's a great comedian just in like terms of setup and delivery, but I think as a director and as a person who had to make these things visualized, there's a surety there that might have been missing from certain other people. Turns out that comedians are apparently really good directors. If anyone watches the television show Louie, I mean, it'd be very easy for him to just make a straightforward bad stuff is happening, but he does some things in that show that are pretty fantastic. And I feel like Mike Birbiglia in this movie, maybe not to the same depth, and like, just if you've seen Louie, you'll understand why I'm grappling for words, because that is a very difficult show to summarize. It is alternately hilarious and heartbreaking and like cringe inducing. And I don't like Mike Birbiglia is not there yet, but I feel like he could be, because these people are people who make a living off of examining the human condition and trying to make people react to it just through words and ideas. I don't even remember what I was going to say. Oh, pasta sauce. A really good pasta sauce involves very few ingredients, but it involves preparing them and measuring them out in a way that brings each of the flavors to the fore. So you don't want to throw in too many spices. You just need a little bit of parsley, oregano, and basil. And you just need to throw that in with some garlic, let it simmer, and everything will be fine. And Sleepwalk With Me is a movie that is just like a really good pasta sauce. It doesn't try to overlay itself with too many extraneous things. He doesn't really have, like, the hilarious Seth Rogen-y type friend who's like, man, you just got to get out there. Like, he's got his parents and his girlfriend.
And pretty much nobody else.
Yeah, and that's like it. And that's all he needs. And he knows how to deploy them. He knows when to let their quirks come up. And then he knows when to make them ease off, too. I mean, the mother is a perfect example of this. That's a character that very easily could have gotten on my goddamn nerves. But, yeah, just in the writing and the directing and in her acting, she straddled the line. And she's still on the right side.
Carol Kane, you should mention her. She's, I sort of forgot she was in this.
You forgot she was in this?
Well, because I had
thing.
Heard.
One more thing.
One more thing. I got this cake off the internet.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Perfect. No, I remember... maybe a quick word about the cast. I remember reading Carol Kane was in it, and I just forgot because I have other things to think about. And then I was surprised to see it. But then James Rebhorn, an actor I love, had no idea he was in this. And suddenly he shows up as the father. That was a nice surprise. And David Wayne just kind of appears, which was cool.
Yeah.
He's good. Actually not playing a typical David Wayne character, which I liked. And even Kristen Schaal, who I'm a big fan of, just, you know, makes a quick appearance. It's neat to see him get his... Or Wyatt Cenac, too. I'm clearly looking at the cast list on Wikipedia right now.
I was about to say, you're on IMDb or something.
I also... Right. I love Marc Maron's scene. He's the guy who kind of first tells Birbiglia's character to think about talking about his girlfriend on stage.
Yeah,
that's a really good scene.
Yeah. It's neat to see him get his comedian friends together, and there's a certain relaxed vibe, I want to say, with them, because you can tell that they're friends and that they know their sort of mannerisms well, or that at least Mike Birbiglia does, and he knows exactly how to direct them. So it coheres in a very enjoyable fashion.
That's another thing, is that these people pop in and out of his life, and it's interesting. And it's an idea that, you know, I'm sure is not new to anyone, but I don't know that it's ever been done quite so well as it is here, where someone who is finally going after a dream is meeting other people who are already living that and kind of learning from them and is able to come to realizations about himself because of them. And I don't feel like any of those scenes are particularly overplayed. And I feel like, I don't know, like you said, it's a relaxed atmosphere. Nothing is like underlined too heavily. Yeah, it's just a really good movie. I feel like that's all I should have to say. But at the same time, it's not just kind of like, it's pretty good, you can have fun at it. It's good for so many reasons beyond that. And I don't know. For some reason, this wasn't really high on my radar, and I knew it was coming out, and I knew I'd probably enjoy it. But now I wish that I had known how much I would enjoy it beforehand, so I could have been a little more excited about it.
I'm actually really happy I wasn't that excited. I like that I got to have this nice surprise. Yeah, it was... Yeah.
I can see that. That makes sense to me.
I know we touched upon this briefly, but what did we think of the breaking the fourth wall? Did we like that?
I think I said it. You know, something like that might not work for me usually, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that kind of confessional quality to it, I think is what I called it earlier.
I mostly liked it, but I just want to say that there are a couple moments where, because it's basically you have these short sequences wherein he's driving in his car and he's looking to his right at the camera, and that was good. I liked it. It was much better than just the typical voiceover, because it sort of brought a certain quality to it, that a certain flavor that I liked. But there are moments in the movie where he talks to the camera during scenes, which I didn't entirely like.
Yeah, I think there was one scene where he's like in the car with his girlfriend and speaks to the camera, and I was like, you're not alone right now. You're not driving. You're not on the New York State Expressway. Yeah. Like, you can't be talking to me right now, man.
It's a little misstep, which I can forgive it, but it sort of at that moment the movie felt a bit misshaped, because I thought it was actually going to go in a direction where he would do this throughout the film, or perhaps it was like Goodfellas where the movie finally catches up to him or something.
Yeah,
but that wasn't it. And it just, it's a little thing that bothered me a little, but I just thought it should be brought up. So it's not all positivity.
Because God forbid we ever unqualifiedly like a movie.
Well, you gotta...
I had actually completely forgotten about that scene until you brought it up.
Yeah, because I saw this about maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, so I did forget about that.
No, I saw it like 24 hours ago, and I'd forgotten about that. It's just one of those films, you know, you think back on it, and some films will have a problem that like gnaws at the back of your brain, and you're like, I loved this film, but I can't seem to forgive or forget this one part, but this movie didn't have that problem for me, so... Congratulations, Mike Birbiglia. Keep it up. And I really do hope that this isn't like a one-off, because it seems like it's so... If you've listened to any of his other stuff, which, Nick, I know you haven't, but to anyone out there who has, I mean, you know that this is like all of his primary material. He wrote a book called Sleepwalk With Me. And I just hope that now that he's done this one and has gotten into it, that maybe he'll do, if not another kind of confessional thing like this, that he'll move on to some like actual fiction. Maybe write like a completely 100% made up thing, because I feel like his observational skills could really benefit not only relationships, which is always an easy way to begin a career like this, but various other things. So yeah, that's me encouraging a person much more successful than me to keep going. Are we ready for spoilers? Does anyone have any final thoughts they want to throw down before we pick at the plot a little bit?
Wonderful pacing. That was...
Yeah, I mean, this movie's only, like, 90 minutes long.
Yeah, and...
It makes use of them very well. It's not one of those movies that feels like it's truncated or that, like, it should only be an hour and they had to stretch.
No, it moves at a... Not only does it fill its time very comfortably, it doesn't feel rushed, it doesn't feel strained, but it's also... I don't know. It just, when it ended, I was actually kind of surprised that it went by that quick. I think it's because I was just enjoying myself so much that when it came to its conclusion, I didn't realize we had been through it yet. Because, you know, sometimes you see a movie and you don't like it at all, and 90 minutes feels like 3 hours, but...
Hi, Dark Shadows. How are you doing?
Or The Dictator.
Oh, The Dictator.
Yeah.
Oh,
fuck that. Exactly.
Those are like my two... least enjoyable cinematic experiences this year.
Right.
I will hate this job for having to make me watch those.
Wow. But yeah, it just moves. It glides. That's the thing.
Gliding. That's an excellent adjective to describe the pace of this movie.
Exactly. It's very consistent, I should say. It's not edited in a way where it's moving fast and then it kind of slows down. It's not structured that way or written that way. It just moves at its own pace.
Yeah. It doesn't linger anywhere too long. You don't feel like, okay, I get the point of the scene. We should move on. Yeah, no.
And I was kind of worried that the sleepwalking scenes would feel like that, but they're actually pretty cleverly staged.
Yeah, no, those scenes are, you know, on a comic level, just from what's happening, they're hilarious. And the way that they play off of the interplay between, you know, dream and reality is really good. Not only that, but in a movie called Sleepwalk With Me, I mean, you'd expect that they would lean a little too heavily on that, but they don't. This movie interweaves all of its themes and all of its plot lines very well, I guess is what I want to say.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Right. And if those were my least favorite scenes in the movie, which maybe they were still good. They just, perhaps when I say that they're my least favorite scenes, maybe it's because I was enjoying the rest so much that they feel a little secondary, is perhaps the word I'd use.
Yeah, because they're moments of metaphor and, you know, just kind of, you know, highlighting what's going on. I mean, they're still important, obviously, because they get worked into his act a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you're so invested in the characters and his growth as a comedian and everything else that's going on that sometimes it's like, oh yeah, he has this sleepwalking problem, which is horribly dangerous. But yeah, I think we can get into spoilers now. I think we all agree that you should find this movie and see it, right?
Yes.
If you have any trouble finding it, I will help you find it. This is a little bit like Lawless, where I want a movie like this to succeed. And I saw like a 5:30, 5:45 showing of this, and it was basically a packed house. So I'm excited. I'm glad.
I saw this at 2:10, and there was like nobody in there.
2:10 in the middle of the week?
No, today.
Oh, okay. But yeah, get out there, people. See this movie. It's really good. Spoiler time for Sleepwalk With Me. One of the things I liked most about this film is that it ends in a breakup. And that's a rare and real thing. And the breakup isn't even really looked at. I mean, in some movies, like, you know, we break up and it's awful. But I mean, like, that final moment where he asks her why she stayed with him when she knew it was going nowhere. And she says, you know, I didn't want to hurt you, or I didn't want to make you mad. And it's like just that idea of two people who, you know, don't obviously aren't unhappy with each other, but aren't going to reach their same level of professional and personal fulfillment with each other, but they're just so invested in not hurting the other person that they're willing to sacrifice to an unhealthy degree. I mean, I don't know about you all, but who hasn't? I mean, have you not been in a relationship like that where you kind of one day realize this is what I'm doing, and as much as it might hurt the other person right now, it's best in the long run? Because I know I've seen that happen in my life. Not just to myself, but to people around me. And for a movie to just admit that that stuff happens and to treat it so matter-of-factly was pretty refreshing to see.
Yeah, I like that at the end, not only is it a breakup, but it's like he's still kind of confused by life. Like, it's not one of the things that worried me about the framing device would be that it would be him in the present day would be like a perfectly happy guy looking back on his troubles. But the movie's very honest about the fact that like the things that are bothering him aren't things that can be solved, really. They're just kind of things you have to live with.
Right. And he has solved the things that he can solve.
Right. And the other stuff you just got to deal with.
It's like the prayers for the alcoholics. I can't say it because I quit the program. But it's something like, I'm not actually an alcoholic. That was a terrible joke.
Jesus.
God. Don't joke about that.
Don't joke.
My father's an alcoholic. He's not. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, boy.
Man.
But that joke is probably worse. But
that was a little bit worse, yeah. Whenever you bring up, like, hey, my dad was a paleontologist, it just doesn't work. Where did my mind go there? Now I can't even remember what I was saying because my shitty joke derailed this entire conversation. I mean, I'll try to paraphrase. It's something like, you know, give me the wisdom to know the difference between, help me understand the things I can change the things I can, knowledge to know what I can't, and the wisdom to accept it, or something like that. I have a computer in front of me. I could look this up, but I've dug my hole so deep I don't feel like doing it anymore. just that concept of taking control of your life in the ways that you can and becoming at peace with the things that you're not able to is something that a lot of movies like this don't have the balls to go for, because they do want to wrap things up really nicely. And he has that great line at the end where people ask him, you know, related to his REM disorder. What is it? REM disorder.
Behavioral disorder.
I think that might be it. Basically, he acts out his dreams and he's taking medicine and he has to sleep in a sleeping bag with mittens on so he can't open the sleeping bag. And people ask him if he's cured and he says, like, I'm not, but I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, things like that. That idea of understanding what's happening, having taken the steps that you can, and just being at peace with the fact that there's parts of it that are never going to change. I mean, that's a simple idea that's deep and the type of thing that you don't see a lot of in films. Usually a movie that has an idea like that ends in some kind of hail of gunfire. But this is a quiet... I don't know. It's so hard for me to dictate in words why I like this movie. It really just does come down to that idea of... See, I can't even say what it comes down to. I'm failing here. I'm failing at words. This is my job is words, and they're losing me. Someone rescue me. Someone say something.
Sleepwalk with me.
thank you, Danny. Valiant effort. No, I mean, like I said, this is a movie that has the courage to put out a autobiographical story and not gussy up some of the more unpleasant truths about it. There's even a point where he has to turn and look at the camera and say, like, before I tell you this next part, remember that you're on my side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the type of thing that a friend tells you. Like, you know, just before I tell you this, remember that you're my friend. Like, just hang on for a second. And, yeah.
Yeah. I sort of am late to say this, but the relationship in this movie between he and Lauren Ambrose I really loved, because there is a kind of a... I used the word before, humanism, but that applies here again. It's a very warm one, and you actually, you know, you're with these people for a pretty short amount of time before you realize there's something wrong. Literally, what, 8 minutes or so?
Right.
But when it does start to come down, you do feel it. And at the end, it is sad when they break up, but you kind of get the impression that that's just sort of what needed to happen. And I like that it didn't take the easy way out and just have them get married. It's, I don't know, I feel like today that's something to commend, because so many other films would have just gone in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was saying.
And it was so perfect that, you know, she still spent so much time planning for the wedding, even though they both knew it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
That was like a good touch.
I mean, it's kind of in line with, you know, he was doing that shitty stand-up like in his bar. And it's almost that same thing. You're like just treading on inertia. You're just like, well, this is close, right? This is still good. I'm still technically doing the thing that I want to do. You know, he's not making anyone laugh in a crappy job that he hates. And she is, you know, it's not a terrible relationship, but it's obviously not the one she wants. And it's just that idea of kind of realizing when you've gone as far as you can and when you have to cut loose and let go. Suddenly making it sound like this is a very depressing movie. But it's not.
It has a slight melancholy to it.
Yeah, it's a melancholic tone. But I mean, unfortunately, it's and that's kind of how that relationship is or was. You know, it is a moment of melancholy. And you have to realize that, you know, you may be hurting that person or even yourself for the time being. You know, he says we almost spent 30 unhappy years together, our entire lives together, because we didn't want to make the other person mad. That shit happens.
And I think it does speak to how good the movie is, that it's really, really funny. And all we're talking about are like the more emotional aspects, because just on a comedy level, it's probably the funniest movie I've seen this year. I don't think there's like a joke in the movie that falls flat.
Yeah, no. I mean, if I had to pick one, it might be, this is in the trailer. Like he says, you know, I thought I should get help or get dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, like, but that's still funny. But it's not at the same level as everything else, I guess.
I like that line, Brian.
I apologize.
I suppose
really
the only
to the place beyond lines, the, lines,
that,
so.
The only lines that fall flat are when he is on stage, because it is funny how they show him to, they show him to be a shitty comedian, which at first, at least,
yeah,
which I liked,
which is funny.
No, it is funny, but
it's a delicate kind of funny, because you don't want to, you want to be laughing at him in a mean way.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't have one of these.
Nice shirt, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his awkwardness in that scene is incredible. No, I'm sorry. I liked it. Ah, man. He does make a good point about Cookie Monster, though. I did enjoy the Cookie Monster joke. I think I was the only person in the theater who, like, uninhibitedly laughed at that line. I don't know. This is stupid, but, I mean, I was, I saw the movie Ted, and I became obsessed with the physiology of the stuffed bear that came alive. Just because that's how my mind works. It's sort of like how I saw Cabin in the Woods, and I just wanted to be like, how did they get all those things in boxes? So when he brought up the fact that Cookie Monster doesn't even have, like, a throat, he's not technically eating the cookies. Like, he's lying to himself. But I guess that just plays to my very specific personality type.
It really does get you thinking about the Cookie Monster.
When I was a child, this is so off topic, but when I was a child, I was like, he's not eating those cookies. He wants them so bad that he's chewing so intensely that he's not even getting to swallow any of them. And then
I never watched Sesame Street as a kid. So. Yeah,
well, that explains a lot about you.
It does. I watched other stuff. Well, so
it's like in Dogma. You know, the angels drink liquor and then have to spit it into another glass because they're not allowed to imbibe. But anyway, I just compared Cookie Monster to the angels in Dogma. Any other thoughts on Sleepwalk With Me before we get into our recommendations for the week ahead?
One of my favorites of the year.
Yeah, definitely one of mine as well.
If you also act out your dreams, see a doctor.
Yes, please see a doctor. Shut off your phone and TV an hour before sleeping. I was actually kind of taking notes because I have wicked insomnia, and I was like, maybe this shit would help me.
Yeah. I don't think you're curable.
I'm not curable. Fantastic.
Last night I was really tired at like 12:45, and I ate some potato chips, and I couldn't fall asleep till 2:30. I don't know what happened. I'm never affected by caffeine or sugar or anything like that, and then something with the potato chips, they didn't settle in my stomach.
Some tasty potato chips. Well, those things are high in carbohydrates, so
I didn't know that affected sleep.
Well, I mean, carbohydrates are like ready-made fuel for your body, which is why when you don't eat a lot of carbs and then actually do something, it's why people cut them out of their diet, so that your body's forced to go to the fat reserves. Anyway, none of that's getting cut. I'm keeping that all in the show, but I think we should move on to our look forward to the week ahead, which will be followed by our random recommendations of stuff that we've watched at home. So looking at DVDsReleaseDates.com, coming out on Tuesday, September 11th, we have Snow White and the Huntsman, which you may recall us talking about. There's a man, have we really been on the air long enough that things that we talked about are coming out on DVD?
Cabin in the Woods is on Blu-ray next week.
Damn, that was our first episode.
I know. That's why I brought it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, history in the making. Also, What to Expect When You're Expecting, For the Greater Glory, Girl in Progress, Where Do We Go Now, Lola Versus, how do I pronounce this? Is it Els? Eels?
Yeah, I think it's L's. I saw that.
Okay.
It's NC-17, and there's a lot of sex and not much of a story.
I remember. Did you talk about that once?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I was about to say that's familiar. I remember hearing about that. And then, of course, we got a bunch of TV coming out. One of which is Terra Nova, which you should absolutely not see. anyone see anything on here that they'd like to recommend to people?
Airplane is coming out on Blu-ray. Love Airplane.
Didn't you tell us about that last week? Or was that Airport?
That was Airport.
Oh, man.
Is that intentional?
Aviation month.
It's weird. Because Airplane is base as much of its... It's mostly satirical of Airport. So, I don't know.
I don't think you're pronouncing that correctly either.
What's that?
I don't think you're pronouncing Airplane correctly either.
Airplane.
Airplane!
What was I saying?
Exclamation point, man.
Right.
Sorry, CJ.
Otherwise, this is... God, this is a terrible week. This is really bad. But there is one film I have to recommend.
Okay.
And that is Beyond the Black Rainbow,
which
is
a science fiction film written and directed by Panos Cosmatos, who I interviewed for the site. So if you go do your little search, that'll come up. I saw this at Tribeca in April of 2011. So it's been kind of a while, but the movie has really stuck with me. I still think about it every now and then, which I don't almost any other movie I saw at Tribeca in 2011. And it is scary. I mean, I'm not one to really get scared when I see a movie. There are moments in this movie that terrified me. I mean, really, really freaky shit, okay? And it's also just a great homage to science fiction of the 80s. It's also a funny little parody of the Reagan era. The movie's really funny, too. But I'm not going to even tell you the plot because I went in not knowing the plot. And I saw it. I'm still not entirely sure what the plot is. But go in really not knowing anything. Like, if you haven't seen the trailer, don't watch it. Just see it. Turn off the lights. Make sure you're watching on a big TV. Turn it up loud. And just let it take you away.
All right.
Yeah, cool. I really want to see that because I know you've been like, every now and then I'll read something you wrote about it and it's like, this was a really good movie.
Yeah,
yeah, it was an honorable mention on my top 10 last year. Nice. So the way I described it, I just want to say is, if a science fiction loving electronic music enthusiast took acid and fell asleep, it would be his best dream or his worst nightmare.
Ooh.
Ooh, put that on a poster.
That's good.
I like it. That actually makes me want to see it. I guess I'll be that guy. I remember enjoying Snow White and the Huntsman. If you didn't want to check that out in theaters, it's got a bit of a taint on it now, though. Considering that
what's that?
I don't.
The K-Stew drama.
Yeah. Did you not hear about this?
No, of course I heard about it.
Oh, okay. I was like, are you trying to force me to say like tabloid gossip in the air? Because I'll say it. Apparently, she banged the director.
Apparently, there are pictures.
Of them banging? Because I know there's one of them. I apologize for the use of the word banging, but I can't think of a better way to say it. She was having a tryst with him. They had a tryst.
It's if not in coitus.
Yeah, that's a little sterile.
Right. Pre-coitus.
Pre-coitus. But yeah, I mean, so if you want to... If you want to see the movie they made together. yeah, no, I enjoyed Snow White and the Huntsman. I won't buy it. I don't think I need to see it again. But if you were waiting for it to come out on DVD, definitely check it out. Redbox it. They're apparently making a sequel now, but it's going to be focused on the Huntsman. So I guess it's just going to be End the Huntsman 2. Who knows? Getting away from this crop of DVDs, we can get into what's coming into theaters on the 14th. Which is, drumroll please.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, that's the Jaws theme, but whatever.
That's just not a drumroll at all. I'm sorry.
That was awful.
Finding Nemo 3D.
Yes, obviously. I was going to say The Master, the newest film by Paul Thomas Anderson, wasn't on my top of TIFF because I knew it was coming out and it's played other places. And I don't know. I'm almost certain that it's going to be great. And I just can't wait to see what it's about, like what's happening in it. The trailers have been masterful in telling you nothing, showing you much, and leaving you wanting more.
Masterpiece of brilliance.
A minor achievement. We also have Resident Evil Retribution, which is like the fifth? Okay, because I've lost count.
Ethan Vespi is our Resident Evil expert. So
our Resident Evil expert.
Yeah,
that's right.
God, I'm making so many god awful jokes, and I apologize to everyone involved.
While we review a really funny movie.
Yeah, I think this movie, like, it's the type of film that like you see it and you're like, man, I wish I was a stand up comedian, and then you just fail and you realize that you're never going to achieve anything in your life. Anyway, Resident Evil is another of these. Series that I can point to whenever I bring up my unifying theory about how, like, the big thing to do when you're making a subtitle for a film is to put an R word at the end of it. We also finding.
Oh yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, you know, okay. We were talking about, I think it was The Raid Redemption, you know, things like that. You always gotta put the R in there, man. It's necessary. We have Finding Nemo, which is being released in 3D, as we said. Liberal Arts, which I've actually heard good things about. Arbitrage?
Arbitrage?
Arbitrage. It's supposed to be good.
I've heard good things. I liked the trailer, and Richard Gere is pretty dependable. Britt Marling as well, and I love anything with Tim Roth in it. 10 years, good lord, why is there so much stuff coming out? 10 years, which I saw the trailer for before Sleepwalk With Me, and I gotta say it kind of looked kind of good.
Yeah, I've heard it's not.
No, that sucks. I was hoping Channing Tatum could keep up his streak. And then we have Stolen, starring Nicolas Cage.
I think you meant to say, and then we have nothing else.
Yeah, that's, I'm obviously not
directed by
nothing.
The Expendables 2's Simon West.
Yeah, he's having a big year.
It is weird that he has. It's like he's Spielberg around Christmas time. He has two movies. He'll have two movies in theaters.
Ah, Jesus. Yes, it is exactly like Spielberg at Christmas time, and I think we should look at it like Christmas time, because this is obviously going to be a great movie. It's basically Taken with Nicolas Cage.
I'm looking at the poster right now.
Right,
just
where he's
says,
running away.
12 hours, $10 million, one kidnapped daughter.
Stolen.
That is actually amazing.
Right? I think we should forgo talking about The Master and just talk about Stolen.
That's a beautiful poster.
I'm going to put that on my wall. It is Nicolas Cage running away from a flipped over car and like the world's most awful photoshopped like explosion behind him. And it also looks like it was taken on an iPhone. Like, that explosion is not happening to that car. I'm looking at this. Everyone who's listening should Google the poster for Taken, Stolen. See, I'm already mixing them up. Anyway, that
I actually think that the poster was shot in 70 mil. So maybe it's just my computer. That's
right.
Making it cheesy.
Well, when we go see it at the Lowe's on Friday, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll be a treat.
Little inside baseball. You're going to that, right, on Friday?
Yeah, I am.
Looking forward
to it. Oh, you are actually seeing this?
No, we're seeing The Master in 70mm.
Oh, burn in hell, all of you. I think it's coming to me in 70mm, but I think it's coming on like the 21st. So I'm gonna have to see it normal person way first. All right, let's burn through our random recommendations, and then we can finally close out this like world's worst stand-up comedy session. Danny, why don't you tell us something you watched this week that you think people should check out?
I'm going to go with Jane Campion's Sweetie. We watched that in my film theory class. It was the first film we watched this year because it was the first class of the year. And it's her first feature film, and it's very good. Narratively, it's kind of a bit tough because the title character is like a really disgusting person and you just like don't want to spend time with her, but she's the title character. So you got to just work your way through it. Visually, it's Jane Campion. I think I said that, but it really announces a very powerful voice. Like the framing in the movie, there's not a single frame in it that is kind of straightforward or reassuring. Everything's very off kilter. And, it almost looks like they're fisheye lenses, even though they're not, just in the way that she frames things. And it's a very cool movie. I would recommend it.
All right. I have absolutely nothing to add because I have not seen that.
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
Nick, what about yourself? What have you seen that you think we should check out?
A necessary bit of context. I moved back to school this week, so my watching schedule just fucking dried up with that.
No more 186 or however the hell many movies you watched this summer.
Yeah, that's had its kibosh. There's a kibosh put on that. So not much to choose from. I'm going to go with Irma Vep, directed by the long ago aforementioned Olivier Assayas. The movie from 1996 that stars Maggie Cheung, the great Hong Kong actress who you might know from In the Mood for Love. Hopefully you know from In the Mood for Love. It's actually about she plays herself, and she's starring in this remake of Les Vampires, which is a classic silent vampire film, which actually just got released on Blu-ray, coincidentally enough, or released on Blu-ray, I should say. And she's working for this director played by Jean-Pierre Lioud, who you might know as Antoine Doinel. And it's about like this production which goes disastrously, and it sort of becomes this weird self-reflexive film where Maggie Cheung starts playing. She plays a character named Irma Vep in the film, but then she starts playing Irma Vep for Olivier Assayas, in a way. It's something that I kind of clearly can't do justice by talking about, so I would recommend you check it out. Really entertaining, too. It's actually kind of a blast to watch if you're willing to go along with what it's doing.
All right. Intriguing. I have not heard of that, but I kind of want to see it now.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's not like that well-known, but it's good. It actually has a really nice DVD, too, so check that out.
Yeah, that disc cover art is just knocking your mind out.
It is cool, and yeah.
Ah, another terrible joke. All right, let's wrap this up. My random recommendation, I did not get to like sit down and watch any movies this week because I've just been, I don't know, it's personal stuff. Work is awful. Speaking of which, I saw Office Space, which was playing on one of the premium movie channels while I was doing something else. So Office Space, I don't feel like I should have to explain what this movie's about, but it's basically about a guy who decides that he's had enough of his office and he just kind of stops caring. And the way that his ennui and complete nonchalance catapults him up changes his life for the better, but maybe also for the worst. You've all seen Office Space, I'm assuming, correct?
More times than I can count.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic, funny movie. And there was just this really depressing moment. There's a moment in the movie where he's explaining why he hates his job to a hypnotherapist. And he says that since I got my job, every day has been worse than the day that came before it. So every day you see me is the worst day of my life. And holy shit. Like, I thought that I knew what that meant, but I know it now even more so than I did back then.
But do you know the cure?
The cure is obviously to get half hypnotized, have my hypnotist have a heart attack, and then start doing stuff. I don't want to get into spoilers, but I'm going to follow that movie to a T.
That's just make sure you listen to Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangsta while you're doing it.
That is my commuting track, man.
Okay, good.
I sit on the metro going into DC and just say, Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster.
Just making sure.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for sticking with us. Surprisingly rambling, shambling, and just we've almost been talking as long as the movie is. Of course, we haven't just been talking about the movie, so that's okay. Make sure to, once again, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a comment, leave a star rating, email us with any of your thoughts or opinions on this film at podcast@thefilmstage.com, and make sure to join us next week when we talk about something. No one's quite sure what, but you'll be the first to know about it after everyone else who heard about it before you. Let's tell you where we can be found on the internet in the meantime. Nick, why don't you start us off?
TheFilmStage.com, Twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and nowhere else you need to know.
All right. That's cryptic. We're going to find you on some pay access only sites.
Well, you know.
You don't need to know about that.
I am a college student.
So I know. You got to make your money somewhere. Danny, what about yourself?
I write for TheFilmStage.com. I write for TheKingBulletin.com, and I write tweets at Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
And I, of course, can be found at TheFilmStage.com, as well as DearFilm.net, my personal blog. And you can find me on Twitter at Twitter.com/BrianJRowan, Brian with an I, Rowan spelled R-O-A-N. You should probably be able to fill in the rest. So thank you very much for your time, and join us next week. At Skype. But yeah, so number two pick, Nick.
Oh dear.
Again. The dot's not blinking though.
Okay, back. Okay. Hold on, just give me 20 seconds.
Classic Newman.
This is classic Newman.
Fuck you guys.
Good old technical difficulty Newman right here.
It's funny.
Mad scientist over there.
All right. We're good. Just roll. Roll. Go.
We Hold are on. Rolling. You have to give us your number two pick, man.
Oh. right. Of course.
This is going to be an outtake heavy episode.
Yeah, it's a week. It'll be fine.
I am the host of this show.
We're just keeping you in the dark. I
know. The Dark Knight. I don't know what that meant.